Artificer Creation.
Welcome to episode 139 of the Let's Talk Photography podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchotz, and this is the show for April 2025. On this solo show, I want to tell you a story, and in the process, I'm hoping to create a resource here that is going to be helpful to either getting more people to start loving photography or helping you to get more people to start loving photography. It's a podcast episode that came very much out of the blue. Sometimes I have podcast episodes in the back of my mind for months and then they develop into an idea, and sometimes they just appear. And they end up being usually quite cool, actually, those ones that just appear. Anyway, last weekend, I was lying in bed, and a little thought hit me out of the blue. Wasn't really, I don't know why it came to mind. But I am going to turn what has been a pet peeve of mine for a long time, and one that I responded to with snark because it felt good, but I'm not going to do that anymore. I am going to transform my pet peeve into an opportunity to evangelize photography. And I've created a blog post that I think is even more useful because I'm certainly going to link to it whenever someone accidentally trods on my pet peeve. But I'm hopeful this episode and the blog post are going to be a resource to help you help others find a love of photography. One of my oldest pet peeves is people admiring my photos and musing about how great my camera must be. I mean, come on. That made me cranky as all heck because it removed all the agency from me and replaced years of hard work with an assumption that my photos are only better because I opened my wallet further. I've worked bloody hard to develop my craft for literally decades now, so yeah, I felt pretty darn insulted. And being human, based purely on emotion, my reply was generally a little bit snarky. I would muse about how great Shakespeare's quill must have been, or how I need to buy one of those typewriters Hemingway used. Yeah, the odd person would sort of catch my drift and apologise. Yeah, that's not really what mostly happened. Most people just stared at me blankly. Because yeah, like I say, felt good. It was an unintended insult. I responded with snark. Like I say, cathartic. But it does rather miss the point a little bit, doesn't it? Because they were unintended insults. There's got to be a better way to answer that. Anyway, last weekend, totally out of the blue, what hit me was that I haven't shot with a DSLR since before the pandemic. So literally every shot I've shared on social media in the past 5 years has been shot on my smartphone, on my iPhone to be specific. Sure, for some of those 5 years, it was a top-of-the-line iPhone, but I usually keep my phones for 2 or 3 years, so actually, most of the time, I don't actually have the best smartphone out there. So these days, it can't be my camera that's making all the difference because it's just a smartphone. Now, I'm a little ashamed to say that having had this little light bulb moment, the very first thought that came into my mind wasn't, I have to turn this into something positive, it was, oh yay, I can crank the snark up to 11 next time and really go to town on the poor person who trod in this proverbial little minefield. But then my better and nobler nature got the better of me, and from now on I'm going to do something very different whenever I encounter one of these misguided compliments. I'm going to turn it into an opportunity. I'm going to evangelize the art and craft of photography. Basically, from now on, I'm going to respond something like, actually, I just use a regular smartphone. So it's just that I've learned a few things over the years, and with a little practice, you could do the same. Not a better message. So, obviously, planting that simple idea into people's heads is valuable. certainly more valuable than a snarky comment. But then I started thinking more, this time while out on the bike cycling, can I do better? Is it actually worth spending a little bit of time thinking about how, assuming they bite on that initial, you know, start of a conversation, if there's follow-up questions, if it develops into an actual conversation and just instead of just a quick exchange, what do I actually want to say in that conversation to actually get where we want to go here? And obviously, if you say too much, you'll actually put people off and they'll think, actually, you might think I could do this, but no, I couldn't, because Jesus, what have you been going on about for the last hour? Right? It wouldn't work. So obviously, you've got to do a little bit more than just plant the idea. You got to proverbially water it to help it sprout. So I thought, started to think, well, what are the most important things I could give as simple little tips? And then try not to go into the weeds. And so I've ended up writing it up, like I say, as a blog post. I'll be linked at less-talk.ie. I've basically condensed it down into 10, what I hope are simple little tips. And my desire is that the next time I have this conversation with someone, I can point them to this blog post as a way of actually repeating what I'm hoping I'll have managed to say conversationally. It, you know, capturing it in a better way. And maybe someone else can listen to this episode, or maybe someone can read the blog post, and hopefully we end up with a few more people starting to make more use of that amazing camera so many of us have in our pockets all day, every day these days. So let's go through what I hope are 10 useful tips to get, you know, that 80-20 rule thing, right? 80% of the work is just 20% of the difficulty here. So these top 10 tips should actually really, I hope, really help people make that phase change from snapshot to a photograph, a creative work. Like I say, I try to make it 10 and make it not too complicated. So let's start on tip number one. Change your perspective. Crouch down. Shoot from a weird angle. Hold your phone up over your head. Anything to get your phone's perspective to be something other than the natural height of an adult arm holding out a smartphone. Because 99.9% of snapshots on the internet are from people at person height, not holding a camera to their eye anymore like a decade ago, but holding their phone out at arm's length and going click. And that means that you have a certain view of the world. And if you just take the same photograph, but from a different point of view, subconsciously, it's going to catch people's eye because it's different. Now, this is always a good idea, but it's extra important for things like children and pets, where if you take the effort, crouch down, and get yourself at eye level for the child or the animal and see them where they are and the world around them from their point of view, it's a way more captivating image, just automatically without doing anything more than that. It's a way more captivating image. Another way to sort of think differently, to get a different perspective, is for, you know, bigger plants and flowers and things, try get below them. So as a human-sized human, when things are smaller than us, we tend to shoot down, which means that we tend to get a background that may be asphalt, grass, soil, weeds. It's unlikely to be colours other than greys, browns, and maybe greens if you're lucky. Whereas the nice stuff's often in the sky. So what if you crouch down and get below the flower or whatever, and just angle a little bit up, and then the background becomes nice tree canopy, an out-of-focus blue sky with fluffy clouds. Different, and maybe quite nice. Maybe a lot less cluttered. Maybe a lot less distracting. So maybe it actually gets you a double win. Another thing I love, because hey, smartphones are small. Smartphones are light. That's a real advantage. So when I want to shoot a really tiny little flower, like little daisies in the lawn or something, well, I hold my iPhone upside down. So that way the lenses are at the very, very edge of the phone. And then I literally put the phone on the ground. And I'm then shooting a daisy at daisy eye level where the lens is at, you know, millimeters off the ground. And that immediately will make your shot stand out because everyone's taking a picture of, oh, look at the pretty daisies on the lawn looking down on it. But looking at it, the world from a daisy eye view with a big tree behind it or a lovely sky up above or more daisies disappearing off into the out of focus distance, it really, really, really takes your shot to the next level. So just change your perspective. Shoot the same thing from a different point of view than everyone else, which is just arm's length at a human adult height. And just that one thing is going to change things massively. Really help you go from snapshot to a photograph. The second tip then is most of our cameras these days on our smartphones have more than one lens. Maybe two, maybe three, depending on how fancy pants your camera or your phone is. Just try more. Right? You're standing in a place, you're looking at something, you have three lenses there. Just remember that you have three lenses there. And your instinct is probably whatever the phone does by default, which is probably a 1x zoom. But maybe it'd look better with a wider view. Or maybe it'd look better with just a subset of the view, a zoomed in view. But try them. Right? If you're looking at a landscape or something, here you get a broader or a wider perspective. If you're shooting something up close, don't just change the lens. Also, take a few steps forward or backward as appropriate. So, change the lens, but keep the subject the same size in your shot and see what difference the lens makes. And, of course, the difference it'll make is in what happens to your background. Because depending on whether you're using a wide lens or a telephoto lens, the background is going to be effectively stretched out or compressed. And so if you're using a wide-angle lens, lots and lots and lots of background ends up, you know, lots and lots of stuff behind the thing ends up in your background. And if you're using a telephoto, you get a tiny little subset of what's behind the thing gets stretched to fill the entire background of the image. And so if you're trying to not distract, you probably want to step back and zoom in. And if you're trying to put something into context, A, this is a lovely flower, but B, it's in this amazing garden. Well, go wide and close, and then the garden gets to join into the flower, and all of a sudden it's not, oh, look, another photo of a daffodil. It's, oh, wow, this daffodil amidst hundreds of other daffodils, or this daffodil next to red tulips and bluebells or whatever else is going on under a canopy of trees with blue fluff, you know, a blue sky with white fluffy clouds. It could be amazing, or there could be a really cool building behind the daffodils or whatever, right? But the difference between, you know, step back and zoom in or step in and zoom out, you know, and go wide angle is huge, and it tells a different story. And depending on what it is you're trying to do, it's going to tell a dramatically different story. But either way, it's going to be a lot more interesting than just another shot of the same thing with a background that's distracting and cluttered and not pretty and has like a piece of litter in it or whatever, right? You know, use your lenses. Use your lenses. Maybe it's a landscape, and while you can get a lot of it in, maybe it's even cooler if you get more of it in. Whatever it is, just you have multiple lenses, most probably, try them, right? So you get the knack of it, you get the hang of it, you start to make more use of them by trying to use them. So just try to use them. Now, very much a related tip that I've already hinted at a bit here is my third tip is think in two layers. Now, a really great landscape shot is going to have more than two carefully chosen layers. But the big change from snapshot to photograph isn't between having two layers and three layers or three layers and four layers. The absolute quantum leap forward comes from thinking about just the thing you're shooting to thinking about the thing you're shooting and one more layer. Just add one layer on top of, I'm trying to take a picture of this daffodil, or I'm trying to take a picture of this building, or, oh, wow, what a pretty landscape, right? One more layer, just add one, and it will take your photograph to a whole other level. Now, depending on whether the thing you're taking a photograph is big and far away or small and close by, you do actually need to invert this advice. So if you're shooting something big and far away, take the time to find a good foreground. That's where you're going to get your second layer, right? And a lot of the time, it really is just the case of taking a few steps left, right, forward or backwards, just a few steps to move a nice rock into the foreground, or to give you a nice fence post to put around, you know, to put in front of a beautiful rural landscape, or to get a palm tree into an amazing sunset in, you know, some tropical island somewhere if you're lucky enough to be on holidays, or a cactus if you're in Arizona, or you know, something, anything. Just take a few steps one way or another to try get something in that foreground. And a good way often to get a bit of interest in is to take tip one and combine it with tip three, and to crouch down and maybe just to get the texture of the lawn into the foreground, because there's a world of difference between an ocean of grass seen from human arm level and a low down view of a lawn with an amazing landscape behind it, or a beautiful building behind it, or a spectacular sunset behind it. The mental difference between a sea of pretty featureless grass or whatever and detail of the grass because you've crouched down is huge. So if it's big and far away, find a foreground. Put your extra effort into finding a foreground to go with the background you're interested in. The opposite advice applies when you're trying to shoot something small and nearby, because now what you need to, the extra layer you're adding is your background. So you're going to start to take real care of your background. I've already hinted at pretty much said the importance of choosing a lens and how that can really change your background. And the really big thing here is you're either looking to remove distractions and focus the eye of the viewer squarely on the thing, or you're trying to do the opposite and you're trying to put the thing into its broader context so that people understand how the thing relates to all the other things around it. But make it a conscious decision. Whatever it is you decide to do, and there are an infinity of ways of doing this. There's an infinity of possible backgrounds depending on, you know, how you move yourself, what lens you choose, how many steps you take forward or backward. It's all, you know, there's so much you can do. The key point is to think in at least two layers. Big and far away, think about the foreground. Small and nearby, think about the background. And that will just elevate your shots so far. Again, a somewhat related tip, right? Your phone's camera app. Forget about even installing an extra editor app, which you can definitely do on your phone. You can literally install Lightroom or Photoshop on your phone. But you don't need to. I do all of my editing in Apple's native camera app. And it doesn't really matter what phone you have. The chances are the camera app that you're using to take your pictures has editing capabilities. And even if it doesn't have many of them and they're not particularly fancy, the one thing it can do almost certainly is crop. So use that functionality, right? Tip four is it's good to crop. A small composition tweak from a little bit of a crop makes a stunning difference, right? What it does is it tweaks the subconscious cues of the viewer, because when you're looking at a photograph and trying to think, is this a photograph or is this just a snapshot someone grabbed with their phone? Subconsciously, one of the biggest weightings in that judgment is, does the composition look arbitrary? A snapshot looks like it's just been snapped. A photograph looks like it's been deliberately created. And where the edges go makes, it's just a huge factor in that subconscious first impression of an image. So even if the crop you're making is, on the grand scheme of things, removing 5-10% of the photograph's area, it could make a huge difference. It really, really could make a huge difference. And some people are just terrified of this concept because it feels cheating or something. But it isn't cheating, because people have been cropped. You know, the reason the crop tool in photograph apps looks often like a scalpel and a ruler is because in the olden days you cropped with a scalpel and a ruler, but you've been cropping, you know, photographers have been cropping since forever. Or the other approach when you're dealing with metal plates or glass plates, cropping is a little bit dangerous. What you do is you use a mat, right? You place a piece of cardboard across the image, and where you put the cardboard allows you to pick which bit is visible to the people, which is effectively a crop. So we've been doing it for centuries. It's okay to crop. It's not cheating. It's not bad. It's really bloody important, actually. While we're at it, once you get over this notion of, oh my God, I can't crop, it's wrong, it's cheating, it's bad, I'm not a good photographer, I'm cropping. It's like, no, you are a good photographer, that's why you're cropping. Well, once you get into that habit, then give yourself a break. Intentionally, shoot a little bit wider, because it's way easier to crop in than it is to add new content. And we do now live in an AI age where you actually can add new content. But it's still way easier to just capture a little bit more and then crop it down to make the composition right. And speaking of composition, right, the reason for cropping is to make your composition not look arbitrary. Well, okay, I want to say just one thing about the composition, because we could literally spend an entire show, and if you go back to the back catalogues, you'll find we have, talking about composition. Forget all the rules, in inverted commas. All of them are just guidelines anyway, right? When you're cropping, there's really just one rule. Focus on how the shot feels. Doesn't matter if the little guide tells you that whatever it is isn't perfectly in the middle, right? Just make it feel right. Don't measure it right, make it feel right. So if it feels lopsided, give some more room on one side to balance it out. I'll give you two bonus tips. Unless through the reflection, horizons usually, guideline, look best a little above or below the actual centre line of the image. Usually having the horizon, depending on whether the sky is pretty bland, you probably move the horizon up a bit if the sky isn't all that interesting, move the horizon down a bit if the sky is amazing. But usually having the horizon slap dab in the middle doesn't work so good. It feels boring. Just nudge it a bit and it'll make a big difference. Another thing that can make all the difference in the world, that's a little bit subtle. Again, people think mathematically I should center it. It has little guidelines I should measure very carefully, because it's really important to measure the composition. No, it isn't, right? If something is moving or looking in a certain direction, putting it actually in the middle will feel wrong, because mentally speaking, you're projecting it forward. Whether it's leaving room for the gaze or leaving room for the movement, mentally speaking, it feels cramped if we don't give a bit more room on the sign that it's looking or moving towards. So when you're cropping, they're just two little bonus tips to keep in mind. Probably, unless there's a reflection, you're trying to emphasize the symmetry, probably don't put the horizon dead center. And in most cases, if something is looking or moving in one direction, you want a little bit more room in that direction than in the opposite direction, just to make it feel natural. But again, feel, right? Don't be afraid to crop and crop to make it feel good, and you're away. Tip number five, then, is one that's perhaps verging into the pet peeve territory, but you know something, we're back to that subconscious, don't make it feel like it didn't try thing. The difference between quality versus, whatever, snap. Right? Straighten those horizons. Right? Maybe it's just me, but I almost never get it right in camera. I think it's because when I use the volume button as the shutter button on my iPhone, it's off to one side of the camera, and I think the actual act of pushing the button makes me instinctively drop that side of the phone a little bit, and so all of my horizons are a little bit off. I mean, the iPhone even gives me a little level, and I line it up right, and when I look at the photograph afterwards, it's like, no, I'm off by a degree or two again, right? Sometimes it doesn't matter if the horizon isn't level, because sometimes you can't even tell where it is, depending on what it is you're taking a photograph of. But sometimes it really matters. And the difference between a snapshot and an amazing shot can literally be 1 or 2 degrees. So when it really matters, take the time to actually straighten that horizon. Probably one of the most important times is when you have a watery horizon, because the very laws of nature means that water finds its level. So a lake or some sort of vessel full of water or a seaside horizon, right? They are level because you can't make the water in a bucket stand at an angle. It doesn't do that. We have laws of physics. So if there's water standing at an angle in your shot, people know it's arbitrary. It's a snapshot, right? If you have water, level it, because it will just look wrong. Other than water, which is definitely by far the most important time to get those horizons straight, another time where it's kind of important is when you're dealing with distant horizons, right? If you have a nearby horizon and you're in a hilly country, where is the horizon? I can't tell half the time here in Ireland, right? You have trees and all sorts of stuff. Like, you need to have x-ray vision to find the horizon and then level it. So most of the time, it doesn't matter that much. Just don't make people feel seasick. But if you have a distant horizon because you're on top of a big mountain or you're in a landscape where there just are very few features, right? The distant horizon will be flat. That's how the Earth works, right? You're standing on the surface of the Earth. Your distant horizon is flat. If you have a distant horizon, straighten it. Get it right. But again, with both of these things, right, whether you're dealing with watery levels or whether you're dealing with distant horizons, whatever it is, right, don't get too carried away by the guidelines. At the end of the day, straighten it, turn off the editing tools, look at it. Does it feel right? If it feels right, it doesn't matter if the tools tell you you're off by half a degree. It feels right. It's always about making the photograph feel right. Related to tip 5 then is tip 6, because in most camera apps, the sliders for doing this are right next to the slider for straightening your image. So while you're in there straightening your horizons, de-skew your buildings. So it is just the nature, again, laws of physics here. When you're using a lens that is not exactly neutral in terms of magnification, basically, if it is at a physics level, either a little bit telephoto or a little bit wide angle, then when you shoot anything with parallel edges at anything other than exactly face onto it, exactly orthogonal, then the parallel lines won't appear parallel in your image. Sometimes, by the by, that's a feature, not a bug, right? When you have roads vanishing off to a vanishing point in the distance, that is parallel lines not being allowed to stay parallel. But when you're shooting a building, sometimes the effect of the lens is to make it feel like the building's tipping over onto you. To just make it not look parallel. You know, if it's diverging lines at the edge of a building, it really does feel like it's about to fall on your face. If it's too much the other, where the building is being pinched, it can feel really unpleasantly disorienting. And what's a little bit worse here is that the more you take my advice to shoot from fun angles, the stronger this effect of parallel lines going out of parallel gets. It's called keystoning. So that's why you have two sliders next to the level slider in most camera apps, which are the keystone sliders, and they will allow you to correct for keystoning either in the horizontal or the vertical direction. So basically you have two sliders because your camera could be up or down from flat or side to side from face on. There's two axes involved, and so you have two sliders. And don't, again, stress too much about getting it mathematically perfect, because you won't. Because as well as there being distortions from the skew of the lens, there's distortions, there's barrel distortions, and there's all sorts of other distortions. You're never going to get it perfect. And you have two sliders you're working with simultaneously. So the amount of possible combinations of those two sliders is infinite. And you don't stress yourself to get it perfect. Just get it to the point where it's not distracting or uncomfortable. Right. So if you're looking at the photograph and it feels off because the building is just too askew, de-skew it enough to not get it to be too askew. Now, the act of de-skewing a building will cause one side to pinch in and the other side to stretch out. So if you didn't chew it a little bit on the wide side, you're going to start losing bits of your subject. So again, another reason to shoot a little bit too wide, especially if you're going at funny angles, is to be able to de-skew and then only lose the stuff you didn't really care about in the first place. So a little bonus tip there. So far in our 6 tips, it's been about how you shoot the image and then how you end up composing the image by cropping, straightening, and de-skewing it. Well, you're now in your camera app. So for tip number 7, I'm going to say that while you're in here in the camera app, there's other buttons. Push them, right? At the very least, your camera app almost certainly has some sort of an automatic enhance button. So why not give it a go? What's the worst it can do? Make your image worse. Okay, fine, then you hit the undo button and you go back to where you were before you did it, but you haven't lost anything. Most of the time, in 2025 and beyond, the AI is now good enough that those auto-enhance buttons are actually pretty darn good. And so while it may not be what I, with my decades of experience, consider perfect, and I will tweak it afterwards, step one, 90% of the time when I go in to edit a photograph, is to hit the auto button. One of the reasons that's become so much more rewarding to do than it was a decade ago was that a decade ago, the auto button was basically a toggle. You can have all of what I think or none of what I think. Whereas on modern camera apps, on modern smartphones, when you hit that enhance button, what it actually does is just move all the other sliders for you. And so you can just go in and second guess it. Or if you want to be a little bit more polite, fine tune. So if it thinks this image should be really quite saturated and you're like, well, okay, but I actually don't like it that saturated, dial it back a bit. If it's gone and enhanced the contrast and it's gone a wee bit further than you'd like, dial it back a bit. Maybe the opposite. Maybe actually this is a really contrasty scene. You want to lean right into it. Well, hey, it gave you a little bit more contrast. Well, give it a little bit more, right? You can go in and you start tweaking with it. And as well as having the auto enhance button, which is often surprisingly good, and for me still it is my starting point, a lot of apps will also have presets or themes or fields or filters or something. Basically, automatic modes with an opinion is what those are. They're opinionated automatic modes. And it costs you nothing but a tiny bit of time to just tap through them. And at the very least, it'll give you a flavour for the possibilities. It'll start you thinking about what is possible when you start editing your photographs, when you start using the various sliders. And maybe some of them will catch your eye and maybe some of them won't. Maybe you'll hate some and love some. But either way, you're going to develop your own preferences. You're going to reveal to yourself what you like and what you don't like. And on modern smartphones, a lot of these presets are actually tweakable. On the latest iPhones, you get a two-dimensional grid, which controls two aspects of the preset, and you can move around in that two-dimensional space by just dragging your thumb and mess with the different variables on those two appropriate axes. And really make quite a difference in how the preset looks. And so you actually can end up doing some substantial changes to the presets just with that one sliding your thumb around randomly. It will become less random over time. But if you're dealing with the kind of automatic or preset mode that works by moving the sliders for you, that's a really, really good jumping off point into tip number 8. Experiment with every slider. Whatever it is your camera app offers you, get to know what it is that your camera app offers you. Take each slider and go too far. Intentionally push the thing to its max to see what it does, to get a feel for what it is that this slider is about. Now, when you're experimenting, intentionally go too far. When you're not experimenting, do bear in mind that in many cases, less is usually more. A subtle nudge is the art and craft of photography. Ramming it up to 11 isn't. Usually. There's exceptions to everything, by the way. Everything's a guideline, remember that. Which is the perfect transition point into tip number 9. I've just told you lots of things you should do. Tip 9, break the rules. Don't just not follow the rules. Do the opposite. I call it break the rules because it sounds more fun. But actually, what I really mean is invert the rules. They're only guidelines anyway. They're not religious commandments. So breaking them won't send you to photography hell. But when you choose to break the rules, don't do it by half. Make it obviously deliberate. Because otherwise you're back into snapshot territory. If it looks arbitrary, like you didn't mean it, then you've taken your hard work, thrown it all away because subconsciously everyone thinks it's just a snapshot. Right? So if you choose to break the rules, break the rules. Really commit to it. Make it an obvious choice. And then it will feel artistic, not snapshot. And by break, I do mean invert. So I said that, I jokingly said, and I did this on purpose, that if you get your horizon really badly wrong, you make everyone seasick. Well, if you're trying to make people uneasy, if there's a horrible stormy sea and you want people to really feel, oh, this was unpleasant, skew that horizon, put that horizon at 15, 20 degrees, right? Make it obvious that, oh my God, this was not a good day to be at sea, right? Or, you know, whatever it is you're doing, make it deliberate. A good example. So I say, if you want your shot to feel natural, then you give people or things room to look or move into. What's the opposite of feeling natural? It's feeling cramped. It's feeling constrained. So if you're trying to communicate that sense of uncomfortableness, crop right up to someone's nose. Right? It will feel really uncomfortable. But if that's what you're trying to convey, because it is an uncomfortable image, it's of something not pleasant, lean in. Lean right in. You know the rules. You know what they're supposed to do. So when you want to do the opposite, intentionally break them. Just don't make it look arbitrary. When you break the rules, break them good and proper. Which is liberating, by the way. And that brings me finally to tip number 10. Shoot freely, cull mercilessly. You could summarize it as experiment, 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 but that's kind of only half the story. It is definitely true that the two biggest luxuries of our modern camera phone age is that there is no financial per photo cost. Right, you press the shutter, it doesn't cost you per shutter press. Which is very, very, very much not true when you would load a 12, 24 or 36 frame film into a camera. You paid for the film, you get 12, 24 or 36 exposures. Every time you fire the shutter, it costs 1/12, 1/24, 1/36 of the price of that roll of film. It could be quite substantial. With a digital camera, you will eventually run out of memory, eventually. On a modern phone, very eventually. But really, effectively, day to day, it makes no difference if you shoot one shot or 10. And if I'm telling you to try lots of things and to try different angles and to get creative, well, one of the things that happens when you get creative is you miss. Inevitably. There are infinitely more bad photographs out there than good photographs. So as you start to poke around in that search space, you are going to land on way more duds than keepers. But it's not always obvious in the moment which is which. So while you're in the field, while you're there, while the thing is happening, while you're at whatever it is you've found, get them in the bank, right? Try everything, capture everything, and then at your leisure, later, review what you got and dump the stuff that didn't work. Really, 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 really important that you dump the stuff that didn't work. The last thing you want to do is to subject people to your voluminous shutter clicks. It's your job to sort the wheat from the chaff, not the people looking at your photographs. relentlessly cull the experiments that don't work and only ever share the good stuff. Right? When people say, wow, I look at your photo stream and they're all hits. And there's a key to that. Shoot 100, bin 90 of them. Actually, no. Shoot 1,000, bin 990 of them, and share 10. And you look amazing. You look like a genius. Right? And just don't be that guy or that gal who makes their family wade through 15 shots of the same thing and make them do the work of choosing which one is best. That's your job. You're the photographer. Shoot freely. Experiment, experiment, experiment. And then maybe give it a day or two so it's not emotionally as difficult. Cull absolutely ruthlessly. So that what you get is a distillation of the good stuff. You end up going from mildly wheaty water to a fine whiskey. Or some very runny bread dough to an amazing beer. Right. That is what you do. Shoot loads, cull mercilessly. Well, I'm going to draw a line under it there. I hope these 10 little tips have been useful. They are, of course, the proverbial tip of the iceberg. And it's actually one of the coolest things about photography, that it doesn't matter how much you learn. There's always more to learn. That is what makes it so fascinating to be a photographer. Everything you learn makes you better. Everything you learn gives you more pride in the stuff you produce. And yet, you never stop learning. You never stop improving if you put the effort in. And you can't ever reach the end. This is a really fun game where there is no final boss. There is no end of the fun. As long as you're about, you can keep learning, keep getting better, keep discovering, keep finding new things forever. It's amazing. The other thing is, the 80-20 rule is here. So the simple things matter infinitely more than everything else. So just these 10 little tips, they're not 10% of the way to a great photograph. They're 80% of the way to great photographs. They're already at really bloody good photographs. And you get to spend the rest of your life trying to get the other 20%. And you never will. And that's a feature, not a bug. I've been your host, Bart Bouchotz. You can find me at bartb.ie. You'll find detailed show notes at letsatchtalk.ie. You may or may not have noticed there hasn't been a single ad in this podcast. That is because this podcast is 100% listener supported. You can support the show with a once-off PayPal donation. You can support the show with a monthly Patreon donation, which allows me to have regular predictable income to match the regular predictable bills. The intention is to approximately break even. This is not how I put food on the table, thank goodness, or I would not be eating very much. It is something I do for love. I just needed to pay for itself. At the moment, we're pretty close to that. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to encourage you to get out there and shoot more photographs. So until next time, happy snapping.